Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 16, 2018. Sudan's foreign minister blames the United States for his country's economic crisis.
Because of the sanctions, the average Sudanese cannot access medical services. They can't travel outside of the country or return to the country. They can't even also find very important services.
And the U.S. cuts the number of its troops in Africa.
But based on what I'm hearing from officials, you can deduce that West Africa is going to have the cuts, because the officials have told me that there will be no changes to Somalia, no changes to Libya, no changes to Djibouti. So that pretty much leaves the counterterrorism operations.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The process of removing Sudan from the U.S. list of states sponsoring terrorism will start soon, according to a top Sudanese diplomat. Al-Dirdiri Mohamed Ahmed, the country's foreign minister, told VOA in an exclusive interview that his meetings with U.S. officials were effective in convincing Washington that Sudan has taken steps against terrorism and that it is time to begin the process of removing the country from the U.S. State Department list of state sponsors of terrorism.
First, we should state that the listing of Sudan in the list of states sponsoring terrorism was politically motivated. There was no action of terrorism that was traced to Sudan whatsoever. Even the reference to the existence of Osama bin Laden at one particular time in Sudan, that has taken place way before he has taken to his terrorist acts and in activities that were very much known and acknowledged by everybody. So the listing was politically based. And now the delisting is also very much intertwined with politics. As you have said, the United States already acknowledged that Sudan is doing tremendous efforts with respect to combating terrorism in that part of the world. The United States had already issued some reports in this area, but nonetheless, we are right now just starting a lengthy process of delisting Sudan, and this process is right now starting at a political level, and it would continue for quite a time at the political level, and then after that, it will start at the legal level and for a prescribed period of time. So it's a political process that led us to this list, and now a political process that is supposed to lead us out of it, of this list.
According to Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, there are concerns about human rights violation in Sudan, including suppression of peaceful demonstrations, attack on media, and ongoing violence and torture. What do you say to this concern?
Well, of course, Sudan is part of the region in which it lives, in which it's situated. We are suffering a lot of problems in that part of the world. We're facing a lot of difficulties. And, of course, those difficulties are very much connected to the performance of countries when it comes to issues of human rights. Nonetheless, particularly over the previous few years, Sudan's performance in the field of human rights had improved immensely. Out of the year 2017, that was recognized by the Human Rights Council. Now, in the year 2018, Sudan is being accepted as a country that would exit the special procedures before the end of this year if it accepts that a human rights office would be situated in the country. We are working closely right now with the UN Human Rights Commission to see to it that this office will be established in due course, and then Sudan exits the special procedures on human rights, a testimony to the improvement that is being made in Sudan with respect to human rights.
Sudan's economy is clearly not in a good shape. Some blame it on sanctions. Others blame it on Sudan's government's economic policy and corruption. What do you say to those who accuse your government of corruption?
Of course, measures have been taken in the country to address all of issues that has been raised with respect to corruption. We have started a crack on corrupt entities, and this is a process that would be continuing. It's an ongoing process. Nonetheless, when it comes to the economic difficulties we are facing, those are very much related to the sanctions that we are now in because of the decision that was taken by the United States of America. Because of the sanctions, the average Sudanese cannot access medical services. They can't travel outside of the country or return to the country because also of the effect of sanctions on aviation. They can't even also find very important services at reasonable prices because of the escalation of prices and because of the inflation in the country, and you name it. Definitely the country is suffering a great deal because of the economic sanctions that were imposed by the United States, and by far that cannot be compared to any accusations or claims of corruption that might be existing in the country.
That was Sudanese Foreign Minister Aldiridiri Mohamed Ahmed speaking to VOA's Fathia Belfekri from Washington this week. In the second part of this interview, Aldiridiri talks about how Sudan convinced South Sudanese leaders to implement the September 12 peace agreement. Still on U.S. relations, the United States plans to cut 700 troops from its operations in Africa as it shifts its focus to other areas. The change comes after more than 15 years of building the Africa Command, and it's part of the Pentagon's newest national defense strategy. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babs spoke with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson about what the change means and which region will see the most troops leave.
Oh, there aren't specific nations listed, but based on what I'm hearing from officials, you can deduce that West Africa is going to have the cuts because the officials have told me that there will be no changes to Somalia, no changes to Libya, no changes to Djibouti. So that pretty much leaves the counterterrorism operations in West Africa. And the reason for this is because the department is trying to focus on near-peer competitors, Russia and China. And so in doing that, they thought, well, let's look at the counterterrorism because that was the top priority for years. And let's start with Africa Command and see if we need to move resources and people around. And so they did a review, they evaluated the counterterrorism, and they decided that, yes, let's make a more resource-sustainable plan by moving some of those Africa Command counterterrorism troops and their enablers, like the cooks, et cetera, and make them more focused on the future fight, the potential future fight, I should say, against Russia and China.
Now, what are the implications then for the U.S. operations in Africa? Are they saying that they see terrorism out of Africa as less of a threat to the United States and its allies?
That's exactly right. They see terrorism as a threat in Africa, but when they have to prioritize, they want to focus on protecting the homeland and key national interests. And when they're looking at the globe, they see the situation in Afghanistan, the problem with Islamic State in the Middle East. That is where the counterterrorism has the most priority and the most possibility, I should say, of affecting the homeland. The situation in Somalia could potentially affect the homeland. They don't see the terrorism in West Africa as getting out of Africa. They realize that they need to stem that, and that's a problem, and they want to help their allies. And they're going to continue to do that through other programs and also through supporting the French. I think there are also some British troops there. But that you hit it right on the head, the nail right on the head. It's going to be prioritizing what can affect the homeland most.
Now, 700 troops out of the total U.S. military, that's not a lot. in terms of realigning against, as you say, near peer competitors, Russia, China, other large military forces. Does that imply that there could be other changes coming down the road for the U.S. Africa Command?
It's possible. This was the first evaluation, and a U.S. official told me that things could continue to fluctuate as the threat became assessed. They're constantly reassessing the threat in Africa. That doesn't mean it necessarily means there's another reduction coming. It could be another increase coming, depending on what's needed. But Africa Command was the first that was reevaluated, and we can look at some of the other commands and maybe see some of their counterterror forces shifting as well as they continue to go through this process, because counterterrorism is still important for the United States, but it is not the top priority anymore. That is the potential competition with Russia and China, because the Secretary of Defense has said that, frankly, China and Russia have made gains in closing the gap of the U.S. competitive advantage. And he says before they completely close that gap, the United States needs to take action in moving forward and modernizing and making its forces lethal.
That was VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babs speaking with Kate Pound Dawson. A recent proliferation of craft gins and new distillers has taken over South Africa's bar scene. But this is not your average gin, distillers say. South African gin is infused with unique local flavors like Flavors, Ribos, Marula, Selectum, and other distinctive South African botanics that they feel will take the world's taste buds by storm. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Gin Town, also known as Johannesburg.
Gin is in South Africa. In the past few years, artisanal gin has exploded on the scene of a nation better known for its wines. At this Johannesburg wine shop, sales manager Tabang Mamkeli says they stock several dozen South African gins, but can't keep them on the shelves.
We play around with more, you know, botanicals and just trying to do something different. Like I said, we're not governed by rules.
Craft gins are reinventing the colonial era image of a spirit once used to liven up anti-malarial tonic water. This popular Johannesburg gin joint is living proof. Gin is cool. Workshop 55 offers numerous international and local gins, expertly mixed. Owner Julie Solero says of all the drinks in all the world, she's thrilled to see gin taking off in South Africa.
I mean, I think it's been big in the UK now for, I don't know, 10 years, quite a number of years, and only really big in South Africa, I would say, in the last 4 or 5 years.
Dozens of craft distillers now crowd the market, offering a taste of South Africa with unique, local botanical flavors. But this is not your grandmother's gin. Nick Taliakis, sales manager for 2-year-old distiller Ginologist, says he thinks South African gins can go global.
The flavor is immense. It pops, it explodes in your mouth, and it really feels you wishing to both have more and to go out and try so many other gins.
Distiller Curtis van Biljon infuses his brew with rooibos, an earthy tannic leaf commonly drunk as tea. He says it blends well with gin's citrusy, herby base flavor, the juniper berry.
The reason gin is first is because the distillers like myself getting on making craft products. Gin has the shortest maturation period, and we have the most flora available to us in South Africa for testing and being able to try new products and be creative with.
At the wine shop, Mankeli says he expects South African gin to take off internationally.
This is us bringing what we do best to them.
We're just gonna
it's too delicious, he says, to keep in South Africa. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at an attack in Democratic Republic of Congo. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what song reminds you of your childhood?
Well, it's a Hausa song, really. When I was in we did it when I was in my primary school too. that no mauma no mi mai dariya da ya in maka tambaya.
I don't know the sound, but it goes like fish. Na 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 na.
Mkomboti by Chaka Chaka from South Africa. And I used to like it so much because whenever I listened it to radio, I could start singing or dancing immediately. Yeah, and everyone in the village could start dancing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Rebels attacked a community in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and killed at least 5 civilians, the French press agency reported today. The report quoted local officials saying the attack came late Thursday in the Beni region. It was a day after 8 United Nations peacekeepers and 12 DRC soldiers died fighting the Allied Democratic Forces, an Islamist group with roots in Uganda. Beni is at the center of an Ebola outbreak that has affected more than 300 people, including more than 200 who have died. DRC and international health workers have struggled to contain the outbreak in an area where scores of militant groups operate. A UN official said the UN and DRC forces on Wednesday were attacked in a successful operation to push the rebels from their base near Beni. One Tanzanian peacekeeper and 7 Malawians were killed in the fighting. Now that South Africa's highest court has relaxed the nation's laws on marijuana, several South African business people are trying to trade in the popular hub. Several highly popular cannabis-laced alcohol products, which deliver the unique taste but not the signature high, is now available in the market. Even without the actual buzz, these products are still selling like hotcakes. But marijuana activists say this could just be the beginning. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Marijuana is getting its time in South Africa's spotlight after being decriminalized in September. The landmark Constitutional Court ruling, which will still need to be translated into law, now allows South Africans to legally grow and consume their own cannabis at home. The ruling explicitly forbids dealing in marijuana products, meaning simply, if you don't already have it, you can't buy or sell it. But the buzz around this long-forbidden plant has also seen a slew of pot-themed products on South African shelves. Natasha Nkonjera is sales manager for Poison City Brewing, which released a cannabis-infused beer right after the court ruling.
We sold out of our first batch of stock within 10 days of its release, and at the moment we brewed 100,000 litres for the next batch, which we've sold out already, so we're doubling that to 200,000 litres for the next batch. So it's absolutely incredible.
None of these store-friendly products contain THC, the chemical that causes marijuana's dazed and confused effects, which is still considered a prohibited narcotic. But even without the psychoactive component, or a strong taste of marijuana, they're selling like hotcakes. Cannabis advocate Connor Davis released a hemp-infused gin through his family distillery, Monk's Gin. He says these novelty drinks are just the start for pot products in South Africa.
Over 100,000 products that can come from cannabis, you know, the industrial benefits of it. I mean, you can build an entire house from cannabis alone, from the insulation to the actual brickwork to your carpeting to your linen. Everything can be made from hemp, so that has incredible potential.
South Africa, with its sunny and temperate weather and rich arable land, has long been one of the world's top growers and exporters of illegal cannabis. But with the change in law, the government's Department of Trade and Industry is now studying the economic potential of the plant. Davis says he believes the cannabis industry can help address South Africa's severe unemployment rates.
Statistics that we have been comparing from the United States to South Africa, potentially immediately from day one, we've got at least 200,000 jobs to be given in the cannabis industry.
Julian Stobbs and Myrtle Clark are longtime marijuana advocates who led the push for South Africa's landmark ruling. They see a number of commercial uses for marijuana, such as the lucrative beauty market, says Clark.
I think that the cosmetic potential of cannabis is enormous. I use a 1% THC-infused moisturizer, which is absolutely amazing. And everything from balms for your tattoos to hair products, I think that it has got huge potential to try and get rid of as many of the chemicals that we put in our skin and our hair.
Staubs, her partner, is less optimistic about commercialization, but sees marijuana entering the culture in a way it never has before.
I see quite a scary future. I see different cultures trying to get in on the deal now that it's hip to the groove and not a scaly thing to be doing, smoking skanky joints. And now it's really hip and you've got beautiful vaporizers and stuff and epic glass and vape pens and Beverly Hills chicks doing it on chat shows.
But that, Staubs admits, is the point of legalizing cannabis. Once you plant that seed, it grows like, well, a weed. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Somalia's 30 years of chronic conflict have left an estimated 1 in 3 people affected by mental health issues, such as post-traumatic stress disorder. However, there are only 3 licensed psychiatrists in the entire country. Mohamed Sheikh Nur reports from Mogadishu.
20-year-old Ayan Adam and her mother fled Somalia to Kenya after the terrorist group Al-Shabaab in 2010 attacked their Mogadishu neighborhood. But their asylum applications were rejected.
We fled the armed gangs and explosions in Mogadishu and reached the Hagardere refugee camp. We stayed there for 18 months, but when our hopes were dashed, we moved back home.
Adam moved into the center, which treats post-traumatic stress disorder after suffering a mental breakdown.
I started searching for her, but as I was looking, I received a call informing me that my daughter was found by an aid agency in the area. I rushed to the location where my daughter was and saw that she had savage bruising on her body and was screaming.
The World Health Organization says 1/3 of Somalis are affected by mental health issues like PTSD, but Ayan is one of the few who are getting proper treatment. Dr. Abdurrahman Ali Awale is one of only 3 licensed psychiatrists in Somalia, a country of approximately 15 million people.
Causes of post-traumatic stress disorder in this country include constant fear, owing to the hostility of surrounding people, explosions, displacement, unemployment, and poverty, which is actually one of the main causes of stress.
Impoverished Somalia's focus on security means there are few resources to treat mental health problems. Addiction to drugs, such as the narcotic stimulant Lifhat, only worsen the problem. Patients suffer from a lack of medicine and medical infrastructure and poorly qualified doctors.
Although PTSD has been included in the country's national strategic plan, the government is unable to come up with official baseline data. That has delayed the government's necessary intervention towards PTSD in regards to treatment, prevention, and psychosocial counseling. All these obstacles have prevented us from effectively dealing with PTSD.
Meanwhile, Somalis like Adam are doing their best to cope and recover from the trauma of violence, with the hope that one day they can live a normal life. Mohamed Sheikh Nur for VOA News, Mogadishu.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The U.S. has begun the process of removing Sudan from its list of states sponsoring terrorism, according to a top Sudanese diplomat. El Dardiri Mohamed Ahmed told VOA that he is convinced the U.S. officials that Sudan has taken measures against terrorism and that Washington should begin the process of removing the country from the U.S. State Department's list of states sponsoring terrorism. El Dardiri told VOA, "We feel U.S. officials are ready to listen to Sudan and are ready to evaluate the situation on the basis of developments that are currently taking place in Khartoum. They are very much appreciative of the efforts that have been taken by Sudan," he added. El Dardiri did not talk about a time frame, but the U.S. Chargé d'Affaires in Sudan said that if it's determined that Sudan met all the statutory criteria, the U.S. is prepared to begin. Sudan was designated a state sponsoring terrorism in 1993 during the Clinton Clinton administration and was hit with U.S. sanctions over Khartoum's alleged support for multiple terror groups that include al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Hezbollah. Osama bin Laden and his followers lived in Sudan between the years of 1992 and 1996. Rebels attacked a community in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and killed at least 5 civilians, according to the French press agency. The report today quoted local officials as saying the attack came late yesterday in the Beni region. It was a day after 8 United Nations peacekeepers and 12 DRC soldiers died fighting the Allied Democratic Forces, which is an Islamist group that is situated in Uganda. An Ebola outbreak has affected more than 300 people in Beni, including more than 200 who have died. The DRC and international health workers have been trying for months now to contain the outbreak in an area where militant groups are operating. A UN official said the UN and DRC forces on Wednesday were attacked in a successful operation to push the rebels from their base near Beni. And finally, Somalia's 30 years of chronic conflict have left an estimated 1 in 3 people affected by mental health issues like post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD, but there are only 3 licensed psychiatrists in the entire country. The World Health Organization says 1/3 of Somalis are affected by mental health issues like PTSD. Dr. Abdurrahman Ali Awali is one of only 3 licensed psychiatrists in Somalia, a country that is about 15 million people. He told VOA that causes of post-traumatic stress disorder in this country include constant fear due to the hostility of surrounding people, explosions, displacement, unemployment, and poverty. And that, he says, is one of the main causes of stress. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Friday, when I'll leave you with the song Wonusu Nas by Isaka Number 1.
I respect you, Mr. Flavor. Remix by Isaka Number 1. Mata kutu bata kelenas.
Mata kutu balenas. I'll be one who swiss him taki. Amolu hajata taki bes. Asma kalam tanasal quest. I'll be sailita befikral quest. Kanu wogisa. Kanu fikira. Kanu wonusa. Kanu doria. Lanu finastanin bija. Bija ubida kalu fogo. Umon bikeli mogali. Intaza tumaru fainu. Intaza tumaru ftesu. Kaninta asuma umon. Ajataki bikarabu. Yala umambi wonusu wonusu wonusu. Yala umambi atako atako atako.
Mata sibumon.
Dakal dakal zambala. Dakal fi ajataki.
Mata sibumon.
Dakal dakal zambala. Dakal fi ajataki.
Lakabata soso. Fitina kaman soso. Wonusu nas soso.
Mata dakal fajatanas, guluzo beteri gaton akwi. De alaya ukala guzete, wo alaya u aruf sababto. Mafizon bi aruf sababde, kujurma bi aruf sababde. Sahara ma bi aruf sababde, shetan ma bi aruf sababde. Ashan kida sibu ana, sibu ana. Mata dakal fajatai.
We have been listening to Isaka Number 1 with the song Wonusu Nas. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Let's know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you're planning to travel out of Juba Town where there is no VOA FM, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kHz. 13865 kilohertz and 15180 kilohertz. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sibu fitna kel bigi waja zaman tawila shan kalam tana salibatalie bibu futu waranasi biwonu suwa kwana ye. Inta malu ya sabi.
kelbiki wajaza manto wila shankalam tanasali batalie bibu futu waranasi bionu suwa kwanae inta malu ya sabii.